Shavuot Tov, world. We're very sorry to learn of the Patira of Tziro Bat Avram, who is the mother of our very own Brucey, which means we didn't get a beautiful Shavuot Tov, but we'll say back anyway. Shavuot Tov, and tonight's learning, there's not yet time for Aliyas Neshama before the Levaya, but certainly we can remember Tziro Bat Avram. Today's daf in Masechet Zvachim, brought to you from Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh, is daf Kuf Yod Chet, and we got up to the two dots at Omar Mar. So, Rabbi Shimon said, if you remember, this was the last shita of all of the shitas that we had in the Braita. According to Rabbi Shimon, even the tzibur cannot bring their karbonas unless it's like the Karbon Pesach and the karbonas choiva, that are kavua lahem zman. If not kavua lahem zman, the tzibur also cannot even bring it. Forget about the yochid. My time with the Rabbi Shimon. Well, says Rabbi Shimon, explain to me why the Torah needed to say vayasu b'nei Yisrael dat Pesach bar Gilgal. I mean, why in the world would they not have brought it in Gilgal? So there's no chiddush in the fact that every time Klal Yisrael brings a Karbon Pesach, we're going to mention it. But the point is, it's pshita. Must be there in order to tell me that it's only the Pesach and things similar to a Pesach that can be brought to Gilgal. Elakamashman de chovot ke'ein Pesach. So those are things that are kavulam zma. Who the kar, but if it's not ke'ein Pesach, so let's say it's something that does not have azman bikviyut, then that was not brought at all, which is Rabbi Shimon's shita. And those who argue, and the shitas that hold that you can bring even the korbanos that are not kabulim zman, let's say you could bring a par halam davar shel tzibur, or you could bring seirei avodas kochavim, those have no kviyas zman. So how do they explain that? They say that the pasuk about bringing the korban pesach miboylei lekid Rabbi Yochanan, the omar Rabbi Yochanan mishum Rabbi Benoa, orel is mekabel hazoah. So the point over here was to teach us a very important halacha. Not halacha is that even somebody who's an orel, and you may think that sometimes an orel is compared to someone who's tame, but that nonetheless, it's clear from here that B'nai Yisrael, who were arelim, because it says beferish in the pasuk, until they came to Gilgal, which was named the Galosi Cherpat Mitzrayim, so they had not been nimo. So in order for them to be nimol, it was very nice that they could bring a Korban Pesach in terms of their not being Arelim. They were not allowed to bring a Korban Pesach, but they were all, or almost all, Tameim from the Mishkan. Because, listen, they've been going around here for decades and decades, burying all of the people that had died, and they were all had no way of becoming Tor after they made these funerals, and therefore they must have been Tameim Ezim. So how did they have time to actually become Tohar after they came into Eretz Yisrael and they had their first Tepar Aduma? So what must be is that, and this is from Rabbi Benoah, which is actually the picture that Gavi sent on Erev Shabbos, which he thought was only of Chana, but it actually was the kever of Rabbi Benoah. He didn't even mention that, and that's tonight we're learning Rabbi Benoah's Maimer. Ruach HaKodesh Nizrakabai. Okay. So it must be that if you're telling me that they got ready in time, then they must have already become Tohar from the Por Aduma while it is that they were already Arelim, because they came in on the 10th of Nisan. The Gemara Yavama says, the 10th of Nisan, when they just arrived, they were too worn out. And it would have been dangerous to get a Brit Mila. Fine, so they got a Brit Mila, that means on Yud Aleph Nisan. But then, if you could only then have started with the Tyre of the Paraduma, so then they wouldn't have been Tahar until they were already after the time of the Korban Pesach, because it would be 5 days later, and this was already on the 11th, it would be on the 15th, because it would have to be Shlishi V'Revi. So therefore, it must be that they got the first Hazoya before they had actually gotten the Brit Milah on the same day that they came in, and that would have made them both non-Arelim and Toharim at the time of the Korban Pesach on the 14th, which proves that you can be actually Zerek the Parah Aduma on an Oral. So that is the reason, says Rabbi Yochanan, that the Pesach mentions that, you see, they made a regular Korban Pesach, means that they didn't have to put it off, and they didn't have a special heter of any kind, and it wasn't talking about a Tumah Betzibur. Okay, so then obviously it was clear that they had already become both Tahar, and they were all post-Mila. Tani Tanaka made a Ravada Bar Ava. Ain be'mamad b'mamakitana. So tonight we've been discussing, according to Rabbi Shimon, we were saying that you can only bring the differences between what he was talking about, things that were mutter to bring on the b'mamakitana. He was talking about the differences between the Mishkan in the Midbar and the Bama Gedela, but here we're talking about the differences between a Bama Gedela and a Bama Ketana. And there too, the differences are, according to Rabbi Shimon, is that Pesach plus Chovot HaKavur L'Mzman, those are the only things that you can bring on the Bama Gedela that you cannot bring on a Bama Ketana. So, Rav Adbar Ava said, you know what? Atana said this over to him. So he said, look, you know, the only way that what you just said, this was the Tanya Kamedra of Harabarava, the only way that that makes sense is if you're talking about Oila, when you talk about Brahma Ketana Pesach Chovos HaKabur L'Mzman, does not mean any Chovos. I mean, listen, let's think about it. Chovos HaKabur L'Mzman could include also the Si'irei HaRagolin, right? Those are Chataot, and they come together with the Musafim, and they are Kavur L'Mzman. So if you think that that's what this is Braita meant, then the Braita makes no sense at all. I'll tell you why. Because if the point actually is that any Chova that's Kavur L'Mzman is brought in a Boma Gedela, not a Boma Ketana, can you explain to me why we mentioned the Korban Pesach? The Korban Pesach is a Chova she Kavur L'Mzman. So what's the point of mentioning the Pesach separately? Ella, the point is like this. The Korban Pesach, that's not brought bichlal on a Bama Ketana. And we're not talking about that. Now, if you want to talk about the difference between a Bama Ketana and Bama Gedela, that means there are certain korbanos that are brought, the type of korbanos that are brought both on a Bama Ketana and a Bama Gedela, and the difference is that in the Bama Ketana, you cannot bring that type of korban if it's a kavua lazman, but in the Bama Gedela, you can. Now, that cannot be a reference to chataot, because there are no chataot whatsoever on a Bama Ketana, right? So what are you comparing? You're just saying there's no such carbon, but there's also no such carbon as a Korban Pesach. So then just keep it very simple for dummies. The difference between a Bama Gedola and a Bama Ketana is the fact that anything that's kavuah zman cannot be brought on a Bama Ketana. Why do you have to mention Pesach separately? So clearly there's two separate categories here. First of all, we're saying, look, there's a korban that can be brought only on a Bama Gedola ever. And there's no variant of that korban that can be brought on a Bama Ketana. There are also types of korbanos that are brought on a Bama Ketana. And nonetheless, there's a difference between them and the same type of korban that's brought on a Bama Gedola. What's that difference? Kavu Azman. That only leaves us one option, which is Eilis. So Eilis are brought both on a Bama Ketana and a Bama Gedela, and the difference is that what type of Eila is the difference? That in the Bama Gedela, you can even bring an Eila, which is Kavua Zman, Masha Inkin, and the Bama Ketana, despite the fact that you're bringing an Eila, it cannot be the type of Eila that's Kavua Lemzman. Now, that makes perfectly good sense. So we have two categories. Korbanot that are not brought Bichlal on a Bama Ketana. So we said, okay, Pesach, that's not brought at all. And then if it is brought, then there's a difference. What's the difference? Kavua Zman. What is brought? The Eila. Then that's what you're talking about. But don't confuse yourself and think that this Braita implies that you can bring a Soyer Rosh Chodesh on a Bama Gedela. You definitely cannot. And that's exactly what it's saying here. Because otherwise, it would have just said, the difference is, anything that's Kavua Zman cannot be brought on a Bama Ketana, period. Clear? So a little bit medoyak. You have to use your brains, but basically the issue is quite straightforward. Because since there's an eilas nedava, you can distinguish between the type of eila and a bama ketana. But if you're trying to think that this prices tell you can even bring, let's say, the Sar Shal Chedesh, any of the Siri that are Kabul and Zman, then if it says Chatas, there is no equivalent Chatas Nedava. And therefore, it wouldn't make sense to discuss it as the difference between a Boma Ketana and a Boma Gedela. The only way to discuss it would be to simply say one statement, anything Kabul and Zman is not brought on a Boma Ketana, period. And that would have included the Karban Pesach. Brilliant Tiyuk. But wait a minute. Isn't there also a difference between a Karban Mincha that's Kavua Lemzman and a Karban Mincha that's not Kavua Lemzman? So there are Menachas that are brought on the Boma Ketana, because it's a Nidav and Nidav, isn't it? And there are Menachas that are Kavua Lemzman, namely the Minchas Chavitim, it's Kavua Lemzman, every single day you bring a Minchas Chavitim. And that cannot be brought on the Boma Ketana. So that would be a valid type of thing where the type of thing is brought on a Boma Ketana, and then it has two variations, one which is Kavua Zman and one which is not. So why did you say it only? I mean, why? Rav Ada Bar Rava said it could only mean a Karban Olam. It could mean a Karban Olam or a Karban Mincha, right? No. Because Rav Ada Bar Rava holds that indeed there is no such thing. A Mincha is never brought on the Boma, which we will discuss further later, and we discussed a number of times in the past. If you hold the Ein Mincha B'Boma at all, and the Pasuk only mentions Zevach, as we'll see, so therefore, the only possibility is to say that this Braita was a reference to Eilos that are Kavul and Zman. Okay, now let's get to the next piece. They came to Shiloh, and it says, in Shiloh there was a Binyan Avonim, for the walls were made out of Avonim, and the roof was the roof of the Mishkan. How do we know that? Minani mile. Omri b'chia barava omar Rabbi Yochanan. Well, take a look at the way that the Pasuk describes Shiloh. Katuv echad omer, v'tvi'eyu beit Hashem Shiloh. Okay, so here is Chana bringing her son to the Beit Hashem. So obviously it's called a bayit. But the thing is that we find that the Torah talks about Shiloh as a tent. Vayitosh mishkan Shiloh ohel shekein ba'adam. It says beferish it's an ohel. Or it also says, also in Tehillim, vayim as ba'ohel Yosef uvshevet Ephraim l'bachar, and that's a reference to Shiloh. So how are you calling it an ohel if it was the Beit Hashem? Okay, son. Must mean that it was a Mishkan in the sense that it was an oil in the sense that it had a kilayim. It had, you know, the coverings of the Mishkan on top. That makes it an oil. And it was also a bayit because it had avonim milamata. So avonim milamatan, viriot milamalan, vihi aita menucha. That's what the Pasuk was referring to when it spoke about the idea of Lobatim Adat El Menucha El Hanachala. Okay, so what does it say? It says that Kachi Kachim were eaten inside the curtains that went around the Chotzer. And that could be a binyan, of course. We just remember, we always call it Kaloyim, even though it's in the Beis HaMikdash itself, we still call it Kaloyim based on what things were at the time of the Mishkan. And the big Kaddish is that you could eat Kachim Kalim anywhere you could see Shiloh from. Now, the question is, where do we get that from? I mean, that's tremendous Kiddush. No mechitzas? I mean, isn't like the whole idea of Yoytze and the concept of Apnei Hasada and Trefus, all of that, how is that like, I never heard of such a thing, eating something anywhere just because you could see it? Well, I mean, is seeing a mechitza of any kind? So where do we learn that from? Omar Rabbi Hoshaya, well, it says in the Pasuk, Hisham lecha pen ta'ale olotecha b'chol makom asher tir'eh. Right? So that was the basis of the whole Yisra we learned about in Re'eh, and it talks about when you come into Eretz Yisrael. Okay, so there, Hisham lecha pen ta'ale olotecha. So what does that mean? B'chol makom asher tir'eh, Iata ma'ale. Okay, so re'ia is only a limit on ha'alah. But note that it doesn't say anything about not eating. So the mashmaut is you can't be mala it just by your eyesight, but you can be eating it just by your eyesight. And therefore, ata ochel b'kol makom shataro'e. Wait, how do you know it means you can eat? Maybe it means you can shecht. Maybe it means you can't do the actual hakrava wherever you like, wherever you see, but you could do shechita anywhere that you could still see the makom of the mizbeach. So ata zoveach b'chol makom shetireh. Om Rabbi Yannai, because the Torah already compared beferish in the very next pasuk, for God's sake, it's the next pasuk in Re'eh. Ki im b'makom asher yivchar Hashem, etc., etc., shom ta'ale elotecha v'shom ta'aseh. So what are you telling me? The shom ta'ale v'shom ta'aseh is already the basic comparison of shechita to halah. So don't give me that. So I definitely know it's not a reference to either the halah or to the shechita. So what is it referring to? What is it saying? What can you do? B'chol asher tir'eh. What can you do? Eating. That's the only other thing. Those are the three things. We talked about shechita, right? So, and we talked about pen ta'aleh, and then we talk about the achila. So it must mean that you can, actually, you can be eating. Okay. Rav Avdimi bar Chasa Omar, there's a completely different moker for this. And that is that Yaakov Avinu, that in the Seder of the Gvulos that we talk about, it says when it comes in, this is a very funny thing, Velota Anat Shiloh, there is no such pasuk, as Rashi points out. And the closest we can get to this pasuk would seem to be, as Rashi says, it seems to be when we're talking about the actual mokum of the way that the gvul goes in detail in Yoshua. So it says over there in the Ore, Ephraim, it says v'nosav ha'gvul mizracha ta'anat shiloh. So the gvul, the border curved around to the east, instead of saying shiloh, it calls it ta'anat shiloh. Now, that's a very strange word because, I mean, ta'ana is usually a reference to pain, suffering, ta'ana v'aniya, like we have in Eicha, right? Moaning and pain. So why in the world would we call shiloh ta'anat shiloh? It must mean that this is anybody that would walk by that place after the destruction of Mishkan Shilai, kol haro'eloto, it would mean that anybody that passed by that area would be mitaneach alav because he remembers that I used to eat kachim there, just because it's a place that you could see. So it means anybody passing by would say, oh my gosh, I remember how we used to eat kachim, and now it's all destroyed. So therefore, anybody who was there would be moaning al achilat kachim shalom. Rabbi Abo says, the mokra is from the brocha of Yaakov to Yosef. Ben porat Yosef, ben porat alei ayin. So porat is a lotion of broad reproduction, like you could go wherever you want, right? Your para varava means you're increasing all the time. So that's what it means over here. He's very fruitful, ale ayin, due to his eyes. What does that mean? It means ayin shalorat stali zon v'layanot midavash ena shalo. This type of eye, the type of vision that did not want to sleep with this woman of the wife of his adain, so that's the meaning of Ale Ayin, because of how he stood for his eyes instead of taking the information and turning it into some nonsense for himself. It became a real Re'iyah. So that's an Ale Ayin. So therefore, his Ben Porat, that everything that is increased for him, that means that there was an increase in the Dinim of Achila as well. So, kimole enera of a person, he would be allowed to eat. Rabbi Yosi, Rabbi Chanina Omar, there's another remez in the bracha of Yaakov Avinu, because it says, kiritzon shochni uritzon shochni se, right? So that was actually the bracha that Moshe Rabbeinu continued. Umi meged eretzim loa, Uritzon Shochnisne, Tavot el Rosh Yosef, Lukodkod Nezirechav. So what is Shochnisne? Shochnisne means one who is Shochain among people who hate his guts. So that's the point of Ayin Shaloratsta, Leonot Midavashin Allah, Shalom, Tizket Vitochal Ben Hasinuim. So you could see Shiloh for so many miles. I mean, this was, as we're going to see later on, the Beit HaKnesset, the Ma'on, that's considered to be within range of Re'iyah Shiloh. So that means it must have been driving everybody crazy. So all of these people who hate his guts, they have to see, oh, heck, everybody's going to Shiloh and eating over there because of Yosef and that bum of a kid. He's still making problems. So therefore, the Ritzon Shochnisneh is the same lotion of Sina that we find by Sinai, Lamedik Rishma Sinai, Shemisham Yardu Sina, Lumesa Elam, right? So that's an incredible way of seeing. In your face, boys, in your face. Wow. Okay. Gee. Tana. Okay, now, when we talk about Ro'eb, Kol HaRo'eb, what exactly is Kol HaRo'eb? So Ro'eb means that you see it without something in the way. It doesn't mean it's a theoretical seeing. In other words, if you live in a place where you cannot see it because there's a mountain in the way, you know, say, well, okay, but if I didn't have the mountain in the way, I could see it. I mean, it's still within range. No, that doesn't count. It's Re'iyah means that you see it, not you see the theoretical area where if nothing was there, you could have seen it. So that means that it needs to be Kol Shero'eh, means you have to actually see it, but ain davar mafsik. This ro'eh kulo is very misleading, because we're going to see that that's not really true, and indeed, there are nuschos, but dafke that take that out, because in a moment, Rav Pop is going to point out that that's not true, and therefore, don't read the word ro'eh kulo, because the point isn't ro'eh kulo, the point is ro'ehu, but not davar hamafsik. For instance, I'll give you a beautiful example. You could see Shiloh from Ma'on, so despite the fact that it's far away, there was nothing in between, and that's also considered to be. Anybody who was davening in Ma'on would have, they're all in there, Shiloh, having fun. And of course, Barnea will tell us exactly where this is, because it's certainly part of his neighborhood. And what does it feel like davening in the Beit HaKnesset of Ma'on, Barnea, at the time of Shiloh?
I don't know, but I'm going to find out.
Well, all you need to do is, could you get into your wormhole and come back now?
The book is in the miklat, so I will miss Shir if I do that.
Even in a wormhole, where you can come back at the same time that you left?
It's the old type of concrete.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Isn't Mon way past Hebron? Miles away.
Yes, so it's not. It must not be. It's not that Ma'on, nor is it the Ma'on down in the Negev. It must be another Ma'on. You caught me. Don't know.
Uh-oh. All right. We'll make up for it tomorrow at great length, I can assure you, with many, many books, maps, and so on. Omer of Papa. Furthermore, when it says ro'eh, it doesn't mean you need to see the whole thing. If you even see part of Shiloh, then that's enough. So lo sh'ro'eh kulo, elo ro'eh miktzato. But, I mean, like, what does that mean exactly? How about if you're omeid v'ro'ehu, but you would be yoshev eino ro'ehu? So, my, what would be the din over there? Does the fact that if you stand up, you could see it? So then you can eat even when you're sitting? Or does it mean you can only actually eat while you are seeing? Or does it define the mokaim? So even though you're not really able to see it from where you're sitting, but you could theoretically see it by, so that's the question. Is it theory or is it l'maisa? By Rabbi Yirmiyah. Well, how about if you're oimed al gabei ha-nachal v'ro'ehu? So you're standing at the edge of a nachal, and then like, basically there's a deep nachal, there's a deep gorge or ravine there. And if you would be betoch ha-nachal, you wouldn't see it. So, I mean, the only thing that's preventing you from seeing it is not the fact that you're too far. It's just that if you're lower than the edge of the banks, so then you're obviously not going to see it. So could you see it even there? Or does that mean that whole area is not included because anywhere there, you wouldn't be able to see it if you're actually going to be blanked out by the ravine. Now, this is interesting. Let's get you the... This has interesting implications. Because we find a similar sugya, as you know, binogeya brochas. If you change your location, you're mechuyev to make another brocha, right? But if you still see the place where you originally were eating from, so then you don't have to. So now the question is that true the same way that we say it over here? It's actually an interesting machlokas between the Peskim, whether this sugya here has anything to do with the concept of ro'eyu legabi brochas, but it is fascinating. So keep it in mind. Now, question is, where exactly was Mishkan Shiloh in terms of the placement within Eretz Yisrael? So the Osir of Dimi Omar Rebbe, and this Omar Rebbe seems to be a mistake, so I'm taking it out. So Bishloshar Mekomas Rav Dimi quotes Rav Dimi. Bishloshar Mekomot Shars HaShchina Al Yisrael. Shiloh, Novi Givon, which is always considered to be one place, essentially, and the Beit Olamim of the Beis HaMikdash itself. So there, the Shechina was there, and nowhere else. And every place that we have an actual Ashras HaShechina, it was only B'chalka Shel Binyamin. All of these places were in Binyamin. Shenemar, Chayfei Falov, Kol Hayom, all the day. So basically, what Moshe Rabbeinu was saying when he was giving the bracha to Binyamin, Chofeifal of Kol Hayom, means any time, Kol Chafifot, any time that there's a Chafifa, any time in this history, Lo Ye'al B'chalka Shel Binyamin. That bracha is that always the Shechina will be Shaira in his Chelek. So Abaya heard this, and he thought, wow, that's like a beautiful thing. And he comes, and he says it over to Rabbi Yosef. And Rabbi Yosef says, ay, 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 ay. You know, my friend Chalil, I mean, he was Abaya's father, and he only had one kid, Abaya, and he turns out to be a jerk. I mean, that's, what a shame. What a shame. So Chad Brahavile Lechalil, he only had one son, and Nebach Volomitkan, the guy's not quite right. I mean, how could anybody say such a ridiculous thing and not be embarrassed? It says, Vayitosh Mishkan Shiloh, Vayim As Be'ol Yosef, U'Beshevet Ephraim Lo Bechar. So it's as if you never learned anything in Tanakh, you know, you never read even Tehillim. I mean, come on. It says Beferish that Shiloh was Yosef, Shiloh was Ephraim. And we're coming off with this crazy thing to say that Shiloh was actually in Binyamin. I mean, I understand. Omer Avada, what's the problem? Why is this a problem? Micah Kashale. Maybe the Shechina was in Chelek Binyamin. That could be. And when it calls it Mishkan Shiloh, it's because the Sanhedrin was in the Chelek of Yosef. And that was like a Mishkan idea. Because, I mean, we have the same thing in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Minamatsinu b'beit olamim, the Shechina was b'chalko shel Binyamin, and the Sanhedrin was in the Chelek of Yehuda. And fine, so you see that it's possible for there to be a connection between two different Shvatim in the Mokom of the place where the bias is. So it's possible that the Shechina actually was Shaira because of the Chelko Shel Binyamin. And we have the same thing over here in the Beis HaMikdash, in a sense. Okay, it's a little bit pushy. I mean, because after all, to call the Ohel Al Shem, you know, the Chelek of the Sanhedrin Gedolah, to call it Ohel Shekein Ba'adam, and that's, I mean, it's a little bit strange, because we certainly wouldn't call the Beis HaMikdash of Yehuda, because of the fact that the Sanhedrin Gedolah was there. Okay, but Avopike, Omar Leh, that's crazy. I mean, What are you talking about? If you're talking about Yehuda and Binyamin, that's because the Nachalis of Yehuda and Binyamin were next to each other. So you could have a chelik of Binyamin and a chelik of Yehuda. So in the chelik of Yehuda, you had the Sanhedrin, Yehuda Mechokaki, and in the chelik of Binyamin, you had the Toreth and the Ashras Hashchina. But over here, they're not anywhere near each other. How could you have Shiloh being next to Binyamin? It's in the middle of Yosef. Says the Gemara, no, not true. Actually, remember, we don't need to talk about the two chalakim of the Shvatim and the Beis HaMikdash as being necessarily adjacent, because in the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim, we had the same crazy situation. We had the line of Yehuda and Binyamin actually should have allowed the Mizbeach to be in Chalko Shel Binyamin completely, right? Including the Yesod. Should have belonged, and that should have been Chalko Shel Toreif. Instead, what happened? Out of the straight line of the Gvul of Yehuda, a Ritzua comes out and eats up that little Amma, awful, and takes it away from Binyamin. And that Amma, it turns out, Binyamin was mitztayer alav, remembers we learned before. So Ritzu'ah hayta yotzeit michalko shel Yehuda, v'nichneset l'chalko shel Binyamin, and the Yesod of the Mizbeach was built there, and that meant that you couldn't have dam there. V'hoya Binyamin at tzadik mitztayer alei levol'ah, and this was a tremendous tzar. So the same thing could be true over here, that indeed, says Rav Chama b'Rebbe Chanina, was the same situation. A Ritzua came Michalko Shel Yosef, which was far away, but Eino Chinami, it went all the way into the Chalko Shel Binyamin, and that's where the Sanhedrin was. V'hayne d'chtiv, ta'anat Shiloh. Binyamin was tremendously mitztayer, because it should have been, the whole thing should have been his, and now it turns out that, oy vavoy, he saw that he was not going to have, actually, any rights to the Sanhedrin. So even though Lemaisa, you know, I mean, we don't have any indication of that, but the Chora, the Chavev, Alav Kalayom, would be the same idea. Maybe it would be the same thing. It's not, I mean, you can't say that Abai is out of his mind, you know. I mean, it doesn't mean he's weird. I mean, it's definitely possible to explain it. Okay, so if that's the case, it turns out that it's a machlokas, actually, and this machlokas about where we view Shiloh, do we view Shiloh as entirely Yosef, or do we view it as Binyamin, is a machlokas tanai? Because since it says Chofei Falav Kol Hayom, that was the original pasuk that it was that Abaye brought. So Chofei Falav Kol Hayom means Kol HaChafifot, that's what he was quoting. And that's what Rabbi Yosef said. I can't believe he'd be so weird. So, Chofif Alav, if you take a look in the Braita, it says Chofif Alav. Okay, that's one Chafifa. That's Mikdash Risha. Kol Hayom, that's Mikdash Sheni. And then when it says Uben Ktefav Shachin, that's a reference to the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi, Yemos HaMashiach. But notice that he does not say Shiloh. No way. It's Rebbe who said, Chofei Falav is referring to all Chafifas in Olam Hazeh. And Kol Hayom adds Yemos HaMashiach. And Ben Ktefav Shachin adds Olam Haba. So what does that mean? That according to Rebbe, Shiloh was included. So therefore, he apparently holds that Shiloh, you'll have to explain it the way we explained it, that Shiloh must have had a piece that was coming out, and that it was indeed a little piece of it that went to Binyamin, even though it was the Ohel of Yosef. Wow. Okay, apparently, those who argue the Tanna Kamma, he says that Shiloh is not included, because it doesn't say Chofei Falav, except in two places, in the Beis HaMikdash, and not in Shiloh. So apparently this is a fundamental machlokas about the relationship of Binyamin to Ashras HaShechina in Shiloh. Tana Rabbana, now let's figure out how much time there was that these different Mekores of Kedusha, Mekores of Kedusha existed. So the Yemei Ohel Moed Shebemidbar We know that the Olmoed in the Midbar lasted for 39 years. 40 Shana, Chaser Achat. Exactly the number of malachas that were necessary in building the Mishkan and that became the mocker for Malachas Makshavas for Shabbos. So it's easy to remember. Okay, so 39 years. The Yemei Ohel Moed Shebegilgal, we know was 14 years, which were 7 years of the Kivush of Eretz Yisrael, which we'll prove from a pasuk, and Sheva, 7 years, during which they had to go through all of the tainas back and forth of which mishpacha gets which piece and so on. So Sheva Shechilko, and you could just imagine all of the fights about the yichus and whose mishpacha are you in, and oh, good Lord. So anyway, that took also 7 years. So that would be basically 14 years in Gilgal. Then, if you take Yemei Ohel Moed in Nov and Givon, we know that that together, Nov and Givon, we can show you from the Psukim, were lasted a period of 57 years. Now, we also know that there was 480 years from Yetzias Mitzrayim, and that's a Pferish Pasuk, from Yetzias Mitzrayim till the Akomas Hamigdash by Shlomo HaMelech, because it says, Vayi Bishmonim Shana, V'arba Meot Shana, Lotzeit B'nei Yisroel Me'eretz Mitzrayim. That was when the Melech Shlomo came, Vayiven Abayit LaHashem. So now, if you deduct out of the 480, you deduct the Arboim Shana in the Midbar, you deduct another 14 years of Sheva Shekivshov, Sheva Shekhilku, and the 57 years that we're going to prove of Nov and Givon, you're left with 369 years. And that's the only way you're going to come out with the 480. So our givens are 480, and our givens are Arboim Shana and the Midbar, and our givens are the 57 of Nov and Givon, so, and our 14 of Kivshov and Kivshov. V'chilek. That gives us 369 years. So let's take a look at each one of these. Yemei Ohel Moed Shebemidbar, Arboim Chaser Achas. How do we know that? Well, I mean, if you analyze the psukim, basically, as the price has said, the Shana Rishayna, Moshe Rabbeinu made that Mishkan, and it was the Nisan of the second year. That was when we had Shmini Shebimiluim, right? That was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and that was when the Mishkan was Hukam, and the Shekhinah was Shaira in the Mishkan. So Shnia Hukam HaMishkan. In that second year, we also had the Shiluach HaMeraglim, and that was Gerem, the other 38 years that had to be spent in the Midbar. So Shoach Marshat Meraglim. Okay, so then that means 39 years, the entire period of the Arboim Shana B'Midbar, minus that first year. Shebe Gilgal, we know that Gilgal was Arba Esrei. How? Well, we know that there were 7 years of Kibush, and we know that there were 7 years of Chiluk. How do we know? Well, Kolev tells us, because listen to what Kolev said. When the Chiluk started in Yoshua, so Kolev comes and he says, I was promised that I was going to be able to keep the area that I went to, which was Hebron. And look, I was 40 years old. Bishloach Moshe Eved Hashemoti Mikadosh Barnea L'ragelat Haaretz. So I was 40 years old the year of the Meraglim, and I brought back the only real information, Hashevoto Davar Kasher Im Levavi, and because of that, I was told that I'm going to be given this area, like it's Merubas in the Pasuk, and he continues to say, today I am 85 years old. Okay, so then figure out, so how old was Kolev when they crossed the Yarden, which was 7 years? This is Ki Avri LeYarden, Bar Kama Have. So how old was he when they crossed the Yarden at the beginning of the, he was 40 years old when he came back from the Meraglim, and he spent the next 38 years then going through the Midbar, so he must have been 78 at the time that he was over the Yarden. So in other words, he was sent as a spy when he was 40, and meaning that not that it was his birthday, but that he had been in the year that was after his 40th birthday. So he's saying he's 40 years old. So then that means he was 78 when he came to the Yarden. And now he says that I'm 85. And now is the time that they started giving out the nachalas, and he wants his nachala. He wants to be able to take Chevron. So that means that it took 7 years till they now completed the kibush, and now it came time that he's demanding his nachala. So that's Sheva Shekivshu. How do we know that there were Sheva Shechilko? Well, I mean, it could just be a svara. If it took 7 years to be Kovesh, it must have also taken to be 7 years that they were Chaylik. As Rashi says, it's just a svara b'alma. As the Briskers say, well, this proves that the Gemara doesn't have the same idea of what a svara is that we do, because nobody knows what the heck the svara would be. Why? Just because Sheva Shechilko, Kifcho, would it be Sheva Shechilko? But, I mean, obviously, the point is that the idea of seven is always the hashlama of the cycle. So if the kibosh took 7 years, why would it have to take 7 years? Because that transition was 7 years. So then that means the ability for each person to find his place and to feel that this is his nachla and his place in life was also, it's a process, and that process is a 7-year process. It must have been 14 years. But look, if you don't like that kind of svara, I can prove to you very clearly that it was 14 years. Because look, Ibai's Ema, now this is a little bit, you have to keep your thinking caps on to make sure you don't lose track of what's happening. So what happened is that in Yechezkel, so it says over there that HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to me and I got this Nevi'ez on Rosh Hashanah, on the 10th of the month. Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of the month. Where the heck is there Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of the month? Ah, there is a Rosh Hashanah on the 10th of the month. When is that? Yovel. Yovel begins on the 10th of the month. It's on Yom HaKippurim that we announce the Yovel, we blow the Yovel, and so on and so forth, right? Okay, so then what he's saying is that on the Yovel, and this was 14 years, Barbaz Reshana, Achar Asher Hukta Ha'ir, was exactly Be'etzem Ayom Hazeh, was precisely 14 years after the Churban that I got this Nevi'ez. And that was on Rosh Hashanah of Yovel. Now, how does it work out that that was Rosh Hashanah of Yovel? The only way it would work out is if you are going to give me a 14-year break where there was no Yovel. Because it's very easy to work it out. Because we know exactly, look, we know that the Beis HaMikdash was built 480 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, right? And that means, if we take off the 40 years that were in the Midbar, so then that means from the time of Knisa La'aretz, which is the time that we started counting Yovel, so it means 440 years is when the Beis HaMikdash was built. And we know that the Beis HaMikdash lasted for 410 years, which means that it was 850 years from the time of beginning to count Yovel until the Churban. Now, that is actually exactly 17 Yovel, because 17 times 50 is exactly 850. But then it's not 14 years after the Churban, because the Churban itself must have been in Yovel, because it divides exactly into 50. The only way that it could be 14 years later is if they didn't start counting Yovel at the moment that they came into Eretz Yisrael. And they only started counting Yovel after it was already where Klal Yisrael had inherited Eretz Yisrael. But that means that that was 14 years till that inheritance. Because when it talks about Yovel, it talks about your Nachala, and the Shvatim. And therefore, it must have been 14 years later. So that means if 7 years was for Kibosh, there must have been 7 years for Chiluk. But if it's any less or any more than a total of 14 years, Yechezkel makes no sense. He could not have gotten a Nevi'ah 14 years after the Churban and have that Nevi'ah come exactly on Rosh Hashanah of Yovel. It's very straightforward. Okay, so there's 17 Yovlot minus 14 years. Where the minus 14 years comes from? From the Gilgal and the Sheva Shekiv, Sheva Sheva Shechilka. There's nowhere else it could come from. So that explains how we know that part of the information. Now, we also said that the Ol Moed Shebeno V'Givon, we know that that lasted together 57 years. Okay, where do we get that from? Well, it says in the Pasuk that Eli died, Fahi Kaskiro et Arona Elohim, and that was exactly when the Shiloh was destroyed, because the Braita said, Kishemet Eli Akohain, that was basically the Shechina in Shiloh. So when Eli Akohain died, that was the end of Shiloh, and that's when they came to Nov. And then when Shmuel Haramasi died, that's when Nov was destroyed by Shaul, and they ended up coming to Givon, and that was where the Mishkan remained until the Beis HaMikdash was built. Okay, so that means that Nov and Givon were from the time that the Plishtim captured the Oren HaBris until the actual binyan of the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. So we're going to see now, I'm going to show you that that has to be exactly the 57 years. Why? Because we know that when, a few months after the destruction of Shiloh, when the Plishtim brought back the Aron after being given hell, so what does it say? Uchtiv, Vayhi miyom shevet Aron b'kiryat Yarim. So that was a few months later, and they brought the Aron to Kiryat Yarim. And it stayed there, as it says, Beferish in the Pasuk, it stayed there for 20 years. Vayirbu ayamin, vayihiyu esrim shana, and during those 20 years, there was a tremendous return to HaKadosh Baruch Hu after the terrible Churban of Shiloh, vayinohu kol beis Yisrael acharei Hashem. Okay, so those 20 years, here's how you have to figure the 20 years. You have ani esrim shana. We had out of them, 10 of those years was Shmuel, because it was not yet time. They had not yet been Mavakesh the Melech. So Ezer Shana, which was the leadership of Shmuel on his own, because when Eli died, Shmuel took over. There's no one to take over after that. So those 10 years, fine. Then afterwards, when they were Mavakesh the Melech 10 years later, the first year after the Bakashas HaMalchus, Shmuel and Shaul are viewed, because it says it was the 10th year, and that they asked the Melech, and that year, even though Shaul was appointed, but Lamaisa Shaul listened to everything that Shmuel said, and the people looked at them as basically, I mean, they didn't even accept Shaul as a real Melech initially. So that was a period in which everything that Shmuel said, that was went. And then Shaul did not listen to Shmuel when he was told that he has to wait. And that was the story of the Agag and so on. So he didn't wait for Shmuel. And then we had 2 years, Shemolach Shaul. There were 2 years that Shaul continued to live, even though he was supposed to die. But it was the tefillah of Shmuel that the Medrash says kept Shaul alive for 2 years, additional years. And then we had 7 years of David HaMelech before he came to Yerushalayim. Dechtiv ha-yamim asher malach David al Yisrael 40 shana, b'chevron malach 7 shanim. Now, so that means we have basically the 33 years in Yerushalayim, malach 33 shana, and then up until the time that Shlomo was able to build the Beis HaMikdash, there was an additional 4 years of Shlomo, because B'Shlomo Ksiv, B'Shnat Arba L'Malchuto. So it means we have the 20 years, and then we have the 33 years. The 20 years included the 7 years of David in Hebron, 33 years of Yerushalayim, 4 years of Malchus Shlomo until the Beis HaMikdash was built, add it all up, and you get 57. So that means that they were still using Nov and Givon for 57 years. Now, take the total of all of the years. We had the 14 years that we were talking about of Sheva Shekiv, Sheva Sheva Shel Chilkel, which was the time that the Mishkan was in Gilgal. And we had the 40 years of the Midbar. And we had the 57 years. And take all of those together and subtract them from the 480 years from Yitzias Mitzrayim till the Hakomas Hamikdash. How much time is left that remains unaccounted for? 369 years. So that must have been the amount of time that Shiloh stood. Because if you add 369 to the 40 of the Midbar, plus the 14 of Sheva Shekavshu, plus the 57 that we just saw of Nov and Givon, you get 480. So with the givens that we have in the Pusik, we can simply work out what everything else was. And between what it says in Yechezkel, and between what it says in Malachim, and between what it says in Yehoshua, Benogea Kolev, if you put it all together, you can work out Shiloh must have been 369 years, Nov and Givon must have been 57 years, Sheva Shekiv, Sheva Sheva Shechilko must have been the time for Gilgal, and 40 years includes the time before we started counting Yovlos in the Midbar. Whew. Okay, quite clear if you had your pencils handy, or especially if you had magic pens sparkling as you wave them. You can work this all out. And of course, for Richie, this is child's play. And this is the type of thing that he used to do in kindergarten. So he's a little bit disappointed today. But all right, Rich, you know, you got to do it.
It was fun.
You got to do it for dummies, too.
It was fun.
It was fun, wasn't it? Yeah. Okay, it's really great to see how all of this works. It just gives you this lovely historical perspective on things. It's just delicious. Okay, so to be continued, Bezrat Hashem, with growing potential for Besorot Tovot, and we're looking forward to more excitement tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, as all of the Nisim are done in the background with all of these Nisim that are Nistarim, that it takes people with brains to realize what goes on. But hopefully we'll be able to.